Hello and welcome to Shattered Lives, Reach Ireland's crime podcast. I'm Paul Healy. I'm crime correspondent for the Irish Daily Star and the Irish Mirror. And I'm joined by Michael O'Toole, our crime and defence editor. This is a weekly crime podcast. If for anyone listening for the first time, we discuss the week in crime news, basically, essentially. That's our job. We're both crime correspondents. We're out there working on all manner of crime stories. Sometimes there's quiet weeks, sometimes there's busy weeks, but the big story that we want to talk about and kick off the podcast today always comes back to the Kinahans, but in a way that I think no one really expected. So this was a Sunday Times expose, a fantastic story by John Mooney in collaboration with Bellingcat, a several months long investigation into the activities of Christy Kinahan Sr. I was going to just kick off by reading the review, but then I thought people might think I've lost my mind. But just one review in particular shot out at me as being quite funny. But I'll just explain to people that this expose, if you haven't read it, go ahead and read it. If you just Google Christy Kinahan, it'll come up. Christy Kinahan Sr. has been all over the world reviewing restaurants, dining, fine dining, and leaving Google reviews, basically giving a unique insight into his whereabouts and exactly what he's doing and what his interests are, incredibly, over the last number of years, the pivotal years of the Kinahan Hutch feud and post-sanctions, you name it. He has been all over the world and very busy, and it was a fascinating insight. You obviously read the piece as well, Mick.
Yeah, a little part of me died, like anybody other journalist. When any, like Mooney or any other journalist gets a really good story, you go, "Great, fuck, great, what a great story!" It's fair play. That was excellent. And we people might know John and I are friends. We wrote a book together a long time ago. So he wouldn't tell me what he's working on. I wouldn't tell him what we're working on. I'd barely tell you. You barely tell me. I mean, people don't realize that. But anyway. But I knew he was working on this, so I you know, it's real. You're sort of, it's a schizophrenic emotion, isn't it? You're happy for him, but you're fucked off. But anyway, that's the thing. So yes, look, I thought it was really, really sensational, and it was. We can talk about the reviews and everything, but one of the really interesting aspects for me was what they call OSINT, or open source stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you and I, we are pretty good at finding things on the internet, right? But we're in the halfpenny place compared to this Bellingcat crowd.
Yeah, I mean, they know what they're doing in terms of using open source and investigating. I mean, once they cracked the code, it was all there for them to see. And you can go on now and look at all of these Google reviews yourself. They left helpful links, obviously, so you can see it all. And when you see it as a journalist, you go, oh my God, like, that was there in front of us the whole time. It's not quite that simple. You have to know where to look, and they know where to look.
And just even one thing, yes, because I follow Bellingcat and I'm very interested in things they've been doing, say particularly about, remember the Russians and Skirpal and all that sort of stuff in Salisbury. Yeah. England. But even the seven aid workers who were murdered in Gaza, I think it was on Monday night, was it? Already they had a piece up talking, a really, really in-depth piece, really, really quickly talking about the munitions they were believed were used and geolocating and putting everything together. And even one of the things that was really good, that it showed that the three vehicles were within a mile and a half of each other. So it can't have been one rogue missile. They were all three targeted. And I thought that was the real value of that new journalism. So basically, I think we need to get our arses in gear and learn how to do all this stuff.
We do. And it gives you a proper insight into, I suppose, the secret life that these people are living and maybe how naive we are as to what they're really up to. Because I suppose we can be guilty in the media of filling in the blanks and sort of saying, you know, like common phrases we use are bolt hole and hiding in Dubai. And you have this picture in your head then that the Kinahans are, in a sense, hiding in a hole. Well, I mean, these reviews show you Christy Kinahan Sr. anyway has been all over the world. He hasn't just been in Dubai in the last number of years. I just want to read out.
Yeah, read this review.
I will read out the review in a minute, but from the investigations, so there's several reviews since 2019, right up to March of last year. He left 102 reviews alone in the United Arab Emirates, 45 in Spain, 28 in Zimbabwe, 16 in South Africa, and 14 in Turkey. He also left reviews in restaurants in Portugal, Hong Kong, Netherlands, Hungary, Egypt, and Belgium all in those years. And interestingly, also in Fungarolo, come back to that. 1,100 photos and 4 videos. And you can see Christy Kinahan Sr.'s reflection in some of the photographs. And there's also a social media picture from one of the places that he ate in with his son, Christy Jr. There's a photo on social media of the two of them sitting in that restaurant. The first photo, actually, of Christy Jr. in many, many years. So it's extraordinary because you're not just taking into account, obviously, the Kinahan-Hutch feud, but the fact that the sanctions imposed by the Americans and the United Arab Emirates government in 2022... I mean, they're brazenly, openly living and working in Dubai and seem to be going about their business as usual.
So we'll talk about that, but I want to hear this review.
Well, there's so many of them, but I just thought this one gave me a laugh. A review from 2 years ago in the Common Grounds in the Mall of the Emirates. Christy Kinahan said, "The staff were relatively friendly, service was reasonably good. One negative point, in my opinion, was the lady serving me insisted on calling me boss. I did explain that I did not like to be called boss, and please could you call me Chris, Mr. Vincent, sir. The waitress tittered, I thought nothing more of it. We were paying the bill, my friend was kind enough to pay the bill, and we were about to leave when the same waitress made a point of saying, 'Thanks, boss.' Other than my sensitive disposition and taking the dining experience in its entirety, I would rate this establishment a 4-star. So he's he's better with his language than I am. I can't come up with words to describe that.
I was going to say, Paul, what did you make of his use of language? I thought his use of language was really good. I have to say, it's not, you know,
argo. What you expect.
It's not what you expect. And we always had this, I mean, his nickname was always the Dapper Don. And, you know, do you remember we got the pictures of him in Hong Kong? He does look very dapper. But in his language, he's obviously metamorphosized. He definitely has the language, I would contend, of an executive. Now, probably that's what he is in reality. But you know what I mean? Now, maybe it's because he's moving around on all those rarefied circles. He has his crime empire, but we also know he's involved in business, we also know he's involved in property, and he does deals and everything, so maybe that's rubbed off him. But I mean his language is very impressive, there's no doubt about that. He does he writes very, very, very well, in my opinion. He writes very well.
He's clearly educated. In leaving these reviews, it's not like they're one sentence reviews. They're quite lengthy, detailed, and very eloquently put. If you didn't know that he was a mafioso crime boss,
remember that story I tell about me. I contacted a criminal once after he'd survived a shooting, and I said, "Look, would you like to talk?" And he went, "Ask me bollocks," right? You know, so I think it's incomplete. Diametrically opposed to that. So maybe if I contact Christy Quinnan, he might say, "Michael, no, I'm not really minded to talk to you. Thank you very much for your attention and time." He wouldn't say, "Ask me, Alex."
I don't think he would, no. Well, he's obviously put on this persona of a businessman. He is a businessman, as he said. And look, I mean, again, it shows you how little we know. Like, he's obviously a multimillionaire. You know, with a criminal empire worth $1 billion, how much of that money has he made from properties and investments? You know, so he went straight, probably using that term, many years ago, and is probably well regarded in some business circles. Having said that, I am surprised to see how active he is, given that the UAE government, it was 2022, but imposed sanctions on the Kinahan's ability to carry out business and froze bank accounts. So I don't know what kind of impact that had on his ability to go out and rate 5 stars in all these fancy, well-to-do places all over the world. But what really surprised me is how much he has left Dubai in the last number of years, from 2019 to 2023. I mean, you're talking about Budapest there, for example, and he's in other European destinations as well, which I'm surprised to see him returning to Spain, for example. I mean, we thought the Kinahans had departed Spain after Operation Shovel and never really returned, and certainly what we were always hearing, and look, Dubai is clearly their base, but he has left Dubai in the last number of years. Did that come as a surprise to you?
Oh, it did. Did you remember... Well, did it? Do you remember we had a piece? Because there was all this, and you're right, we get to hear very little, and you have to fill in the blanks, and sometimes they're very, very large blanks. But do you remember we did a piece saying that they were using sort of Dubai as their base, but were travelling around? Now, we don't know about Daniel or Christy Jr. We just don't, or Christopher. We don't. But I think it's clear that Christy Sr. is using it as a base and is moving around. Now, look, our information was that they were sort of limiting to sort of Oman and, you know, around there, but they are. I mean, do you remember that story? Remember that we had that they were going in and out of Dubai? Now, that was after the sanctions. What does it tell you about his state of mind? Because some of these reviews were after the sanctions, weren't they?
Yeah, some of them are. It's right up to March of 2023 there.
As you say, that the sanctions were imposed in April, I think towards the middle end of April 2022. So coming up to 2 years. So, you know, he had the guts of a year while he was still able to do this. Now, what does that say to you?
Well, either he's putting on an incredibly brave face, but I would say by the amount of travel that he's doing and the openness in which he's doing it, it shows the demeanour of someone who's very relaxed, clearly. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't seem to have the weight of the world on his shoulders. It's not the kind of persona maybe we would have thought, where, as I said, hiding in a bolt hole, it doesn't give that at all, that impression at all.
And what I can't get my head around, okay, so the guards are after him. We know that the guards are investigating Daniel. We know that there's a file in relation to the murder of Eddie Hutch. We know that he's investigated for the whole Embraer Rackus thing when they tried to murder Michael Gately. We know that there's an extradition request for Sean McGovern over one of the murders, that Noel Kerwin in Clondalkin in December 2016. Sean McGovern's over there, a key player in the Kinahan cartel. But it's just really, really interesting to me that the guards are after them. We know that Dubai has said they're going to impose things on him. But this is America. It's America has put a $5 million bounty on each of their three Kinahan's heads. And if the Americans were after me, I wouldn't be so relaxed. So I find it hard to get my head around that. In other words, you know that whole thing, fuck around and find out. If the Yanks are after you, you're in trouble. They have a global reach. Ireland doesn't have that real global reach. We don't have that superpower thing, but America is the world's superpower, and they're after Kinahan. And why is he so, I don't know, is blasé the right word? I can't get my head around that, I'll be honest.
No, and also, I mean, showing that he is in numerous different countries says to me he has the ability to travel quite freely. So if and when you know, a prosecution comes down the line and the Irish government, or sorry, the Irish authorities are looking for an arrest warrant to be issued in Dubai, I mean, are they just going to flee? Is it that easy for them to leave the country? Well, clearly, it's very easy for Christy Kinahan Sr. to leave the country right up to March of last year. He's been very busy. So it does beg the question. They're not locked in there in Dubai. They have the ability, at least Christy Sr. has the ability to leave the country.
Do you have any theories as to why he stopped?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the date is March 2023. So it's not like he stopped at the time of the sanctions. He kept going. So, I mean, I don't know, to be honest. Maybe he copped on to the fact that someone was looking at his Google reviews, possibly, but I don't know.
But he would have deleted them, surely, if he thought that, wouldn't he? Who knows? Again, Paul, there are things, you know, the whole Donald Rumsfeld thing about known knowns and unknown unknowns and stuff. Who knows what's going on? We are always in the dark, and we're struggling towards the light. But I just found it interesting that he did stop in March, almost a year ago, almost a year after the sanctions. So I just wonder about that, I have to be honest.
It is strange. And speaking of things that we don't know about, we also see that he went to Fungarola in 2021. And left a review of a restaurant there in Fungarola and described eating with quote-unquote three guests there. Now, the investigation by the Sunday Times found that the restaurant is just 100 metres from where Jerry Hutch was actually eventually arrested in Fungarola. He has an apartment there in Fungarola. So you're talking mere metres in distance between where Christy Kinahan Sr. was wining and dining and where Jerry the Monk Hutch was living on and off at the time. In the midst of the Kinnahan and Hutch feud, again, at a period of time where it would have been unthinkable, really, that these two men would be anywhere near each other, let alone in Spain. What does that suggest?
Oh, look, do you believe in coincidences? I don't believe in coincidences. And we do know that Hutch and Kinnahan, you know, did have some sort of relationship before the feud. And we knew that there were perhaps efforts to try and get this sorted out. Maybe this was a sign that in, that it has been sorted out. I'm just trying to get my head around it. When was that Fuengirola dinner with the three guests?
I haven't got the date. Right. In front of
oh, no, that's fine.
2021.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So it was 2021 that he was at. He was in September 2021. He was extradited. And if I recall, it was, I think it was March. Do you remember we had the story of him flying from the Lanzarote to Malaga, which is near the nearest airport to Fuengirola? Remember he went in with the beard and everything? I think that was March 2021. I remember the whole, it was caught on CCTV and all, it was a great story. So I wonder, did we think it's the whole benefit of hindsight? Was he flying because was he leaving Lanzarote because he was fleeing, or was he leaving Lanzarote because he was going over to McKinnon?
Well, it opens that speculation, doesn't it? But it's not even something that would have even been on our radar. As you said, we always say we're lucky if we hear fucking 10% of it. So there you go.
But it's a good 10%.
Yeah, but even, I mean, it's amazing. From a Google review, now we're speculating with reasonable, you know, reasons to be speculating that perhaps Gerry Hutch and Christy Kinnahan met in 2021.
It is a bit far-fetched for it to be a coincidence.
Yeah, well, it's even more far-fetched that he then went and left a Google review of the meal that he possibly ate while he was carving out a peace deal, potentially, with Gerry Hutch. I'll tell you one thing, and we spoke about this before, the actions of Gerry Hutch have been interesting ever since his acquittal. He certainly didn't leave Ireland straight away. He stayed around. He openly walked around the streets and was photographed numerous times. Only there, just the other day, he was photographed back in Lanzarote, enjoying a Coors Light. He's not hiding. Several other members of the Hutch family are openly not hiding. Patsy Hutch and Patrick Hutch Jr. were seen in the last number of days and in the last year quite a bit. So there seems to be, and we spoke about this before, possibly something we don't know about in terms of a relaxing among people on the Hutch side of things, that they don't seem to be as in fear of their lives. So has something gone on in the background that we don't know about? We speculated about that before, yeah. So perhaps that's what it was.
Do you remember we did this story, when was it, maybe 6 months ago, about the post, what is called the post, the 24-hour Garda protection at Patsy Hutch's house? Now, we know that Patsy Hutch, yes, Gerry's older brother, was a significant target for the Kinnahan cartel. He's Patrick's father, who was acquitted of the Regency as well, and Ollie Prosecco was entered over the Regency as well. Patsy Hutch has been a real top target. We know that they sent at least two hit squads to murder him. So they had this community reassurance speech. So it wasn't just a protection post for Patsy Hutch's house. It was for that whole community in North Inner City, trying to offer protection and community reassurance for him. So that post is gone. Now, the guards must know something, because they take a risk assessment and they will not take off a post if they have a belief that he is at risk.
Having said that, you may remember a conversation we had with someone who I won't go into too many specifics, but there is still a belief that the feud could kick off at any moment, and I think you've written something to that effect as well. So while there might be a calming of the storm, I still think people are looking over their shoulders and taking certain precautions. But there must have been something in the last number of years that certainly relaxed things, both on the Garda radar and on the Hutch and Kinnahan sides.
Yes, and the last murder was in late January 2018. Now, I think there were a couple of, you know, attempts and a couple of conspiracies in 2018 and maybe into 2019. But, you know, it's been largely quiet since then. But you're right. Investigators would believe that it could kick off at any time, and there are still underlying currents. But I just find that really interesting about that dinner in Fuengirola. Personally, I don't believe in coincidences.
No, I mean, it would be extraordinary. I mean, they probably could have even just bumped into each other if it wasn't, meant to be. I mean, that particular spot is extremely well populated and a touristy spot, you know, so it's not exactly hiding.
Can you imagine if it was
happening in broad daylight?
Can you imagine if it was a coincidence and Jerry Hutch is sitting there having a dinner and Christy Kinnane walks in? So I don't think so.
No, especially, I mean, you know, that's out of sorts even when you look at Christy Kinnahan's, I'm not saying that these reviews are an exact match of what he was doing in every waking moment, but he left so many reviews that we can see a pattern of where he hangs out, and for him to go to Fungarola is unusual. It's not, it doesn't follow the pattern of all the other places that he goes to, which are primarily, to be honest, in Dubai, you can see.
Let me ask you this. Is this bad for the guards? I think it is.
In terms of all this information coming out into the public sphere?
No, the fact that he's doing it, that he's traipsing around the world, that he's... I'm not saying he's taking the piss, but I think it's a bad look for the guards that, you know, despite their best efforts, and they have been making real efforts, and the government has been making real efforts, Christy Kinnane is living his life.
Yeah, and I think it's a source of frustration for us that we're certainly banging on the door trying to find out more information about what do they know that we don't know. I mean, you see an air of confidence with Drew Harris going over to Dubai, we've mentioned. The guards are now pushing for this file. They've sent it to the DPP. They're pushing for charges. So there's a degree of confidence. But at the same time, now that this has come out, it shows that the Kinnahans are getting on with their lives. I think it is maybe slightly embarrassing, but it all depends what's going to come next. So is this file going to come back and recommend charges, and then are they going to pursue them, or are we going to have 2 or 3 years of just painful process to try and extradite them, and then by the time they get to it, they've gone, they've left the country. I hope not.
I'll just mention this briefly. We'll talk about AGSI in a wee while, but I was at the Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors meeting in Mayo last week, and both Drew Harris and Justice Minister Helen McEntee were asked about Kinnane. We always ask what's happening. And Minister McEntee, she said something significant. She said she believes that the Dubai authorities are four square behind the Irish in this. And then we asked, now that was significant, because you know, after a press conference, you're sitting there going, what was the best line here? And it just jumped out at me. I think that's the first time she has really said that she believes Dubai authorities are as one or at EDM with the Irish authorities over this. So I thought that was significant. And then Drew Harris, he was asked about Kinnane's and well, he said, look, basically, we're going on, we're confident, it's just taking time because they have their own discrete or separate laws. So they were both relatively bullish. Now that was on Tuesday, Mooney's story came out on the Sunday. But look, the Garda confidence must have taken a knock from that, because it is quite significant.
Yeah, unless, you know, and I'm being ultra cynical here now, unless Kinnahan is putting on a bit of a show, knowing full well that someone's going to look at his reviews to sort of show off and say, well, I'm continuing to live my life, fuck you. I mean, I'm just looking at the Bellingcat story here and seeing, you know, how he was showing off that he was in a Rolex store, for example, in 2021. Mm. For a short-term fix to an issue he had, so getting a Rolex watch, expensive Rolex watch fixed. Then September 2022, he was in Ras Al Khaimah in the UAE, taking a picture of a yacht that's valued at $300 million. So he is sort of showing off anyway, so I don't know whether there's a degree of a kind of a FU, we don't care, like, to it. Perhaps there is.
Yeah, well, you know, It's the saga. It's been a saga since 2015, and I think there's more than a few years left in this saga yet.
Well, it's fascinating. So, you know, kudos to John Mooney and to Bellingcat. A great story. We'll hopefully get some great stories of our own.
Yeah, yeah. Just, Mooney, enough stories, big lad. That'll do you. Thanks.
Yeah. Fascinating subject. So, yeah, you mentioned the AGSI conference. You were at it. Obviously, every year there are issues that come up, but uniform is still a problem for, this is the new uniform now, is an issue.
Yeah, so the first night, we there were maybe 3 or 4 speakers lined up, and it jumped out at us. There was an inspector Gill, I think, Patricia Gill from Clondalkin. It's made a very valid point. Look, it's anybody who sees the new uniform, it's got cargo pants. It's quite, you know, you can be rolling around the floor and wherever with some fella, you know, trying to batter your head. It's robust and stuff like that. But you basically said, if you're at a scene at 2:30 in the morning in the winter, it's just not warm enough. And then she said that they have this soft shell jacket. You'll see it, it's sort of half high-vis and half black. And she said, and you wear that inside. And she said, when you're wearing that inside, it's too warm. So she used the word thermal, some thermal efficacy or something. She said, basically, in plain English, it's too hot and it's too cold. So they were giving it about that. Now, we go to, there's a couple of conferences we go to every year. There's AGSI, Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors, and the GRA, which is the Garda Representative Association, which looks after rank and file members of the force. They could not be more different. I think the GRA, which you're, is it next week?
Yeah, it's the end of the month.
End of the month. Okay. So the GRA,
three more weeks.
The GRA is really to the barricades. I think AGSI is much more conservative and definitely much more tame. I think that's a firm point, is it? No,
it's a fair point. I mean, they're of a more senior rank.
Yeah,
so they're slightly older. A lot of them, not to.
That's where I go.
No, and maybe they're more mature. I don't know. No, I'm only teasing.
So there wasn't really.
How about this?
There wasn't really much. You know, like if you go, I guarantee you at the GRA when it's on at the end of the month, and there'd probably be 10 issues that we can make stories out of, and we can get stuff, you know, good meaty stories. There were a couple of issues. The one about, actually, you know, I'll send this to you to privately. The whole thing about the uniform is one that stood out for me, but I remember the commissioner, he had the press conference and everybody was giving him all the hard questions. And it came to my turn and all I could say was, are you going to fix the uniforms? And I can remember afterwards turning around, a fella and said, fuck me, I was hardly Jeremy Paxman there. It wasn't exactly the hardest question I'm going to ask anybody. But I do...
Well, did he answer it?
He did. He answered it. And that's what I was going to talk about. Drew Harris comes in for a lot of criticism. We hold him to account and, you know, he's always in the news and there's always stuff. It just struck me, I was at Temple Moor, was it a week beforehand, when the whole thing about Bikegate, that poor Garda down the Midlands who had a terrible time because he lent a pensioner in need a bike. And it was tricky, it was a really tricky wicket for the commissioner. So he, as ever, there's a press conference. So we had a press conference at AGSI and we had a press conference at Temple Moor. It was a graduation ceremony and it wasn't about guards graduate, it was about that poor guard. And we went at him for like 10 or 15 minutes. And the only thing about Drew Harris, it's about all the flaws and everybody has flaws. It just struck me when I was at AGSI at that press conference. He stands there and he answers whatever question we threw at him. You and I have both spoken to other politicians and stuff who will give you political answers. It's almost as if they're a special advisor, we won't talk about them, the special advisor has said, okay, boss, here are your answers. Do not deviate from these answers, right? And you could ask him 14 different ways. You can try, we all try follow-ups. Well, they didn't answer that case, we'll go at it from this side. And they just, nah. Think about Harris. He answers questions and I think he deserves praise for that. He will stand there and he will go toe-to-toe and there's never any sort of, I don't want to answer that, or right, he gives his wee sneaky look to his press people. He just stands there and answers questions. And I respect that. To be honest, I have to say that.
And when do you start your new job as Drew's
advisor? Yeah, that'll be happening. Anyway, so the other, I'm going to give you a kicking for that. So anyway, the other thing that came out of AGSI for me was I spoke to a fella called Eamon Griffin, who's a sergeant in Ballybuffet, Glenties area. Now, there was a real high profile case in early 2020. If you may remember, there was a fella, a hunter who was down in from Carlo and he went up to Glenties and he got off his head on drink and drugs and he brought his rifle out and started shooting. So Eamon Griffin, he and a couple of guards got a Scott Medal for it. But I was interviewing him because he got an excellence award from AGSI for this. And he was just talking about what's it like to be shot at. He said one bullet went over his head. He could feel it whizzing past and he could hear it whizzing past. And I wanted to know what that was like. And it was really interesting because he said, effectively, when he was being shot at, he felt really, really calm. And he kept on saying that he had a moment's clarity. He knew what he had to do. And he wasn't, can you imagine being shot at? You would think that some people would just go to pieces. And it was just really interesting. I think this is because I've spoken to other, you know, soldiers and various other guards and things like this. And a lot of them do have this calmness. A lot of them, aren't up for it. And it's only when you're in action that you realise you've got it or you haven't. But it was just really interesting that he said things, he had such clarity that things were in slow motion for him. Now, I thought that was remarkable. Wow. And I asked him, would he do it again? And he said, oh, Jesus, yeah, I'd have to, because I couldn't leave people like that. I just thought that was remarkable.
Thank God we have people like that in the world, because that's an incredible bravery, having gone through it. I mean, that sounds terrifying. And that goes to show you that it's not a job for everybody. You have to, I don't know, you have to have something special in you, you know, to be able to do it.
And, you know, I'm not dissing uniform. He was a uniform Garda sergeant, so he wasn't part of a specialist unit. He wasn't an armed detective. He was, I used to call him 5'8", a guard or a sergeant. But I'm sure there's people who train in the guards or in the defence forces. And the minute something happens, it's just not in them. Whereas his mettle was tested, probably in something that he thought he would never have to experience. And he just felt very calm, and he had a huge amount of clarity while it was going on.
It's incredible. I mean, the fact that he said he would be willing to do it again, you know, putting other lives ahead of his own. As I said, thank God we have people like that in the Defence Forces and in the Gardaí. Yeah,
absolutely.
They're few and far between, unfortunately, but thank God we have them. We want to talk also about the murder of a young Irish lady in New York. This is Sarah McNally. She's originally from County Longford, and she was stabbed there in the Cayley House pub in Queens there last Saturday. Obviously a terrible tragedy. We learned about it after the fact, and it was news obviously first in New York and then here, and you were working on it, Mick. I think you went down to her hometown and spoke to her family.
Yeah, there's a great sense of shock and loss in Longford. So you're right, it was Saturday evening. I went down on Monday, the bank holiday, Easter Monday, basically knocked on the door, and I got Dorry O'Connor, who would be Sarah's mother. Look, didn't really want to say much, didn't want to talk, but she just said something simple. She said, I asked if she wanted to talk, and she said, my child has been murdered. My daughter has been murdered. What else can I say? And it sort of made me pause. Look, we have to go and knock. We have to go and talk, because we have to go and try to see if people want to talk. You do doorsteps now more than me, but it was just so simple what she said. And it's hard to get around that.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine she was quite emotional, I'm sure. That captures, you know, the whole emotion of it, doesn't it? I mean, what more can you say?
My daughter has been murdered. What else can I say? And it's true. Mm. But look, so this man, her partner, Sarah's partner, Marion Piesiak, he's 36-year-old. He's now been charged with her murder and also two counts of possessing a weapon. He was injured in the same incident. He was taken to the hospital as well. Now, he recovered and he has been charged. Now, he was arrested and has been charged. And as of we're recording this, he hasn't appeared, but he will be appearing very soon. But just a terrible tragedy. She used to work in the Irish Prison Service, actually. I know that's one of our areas of our beat. But Sarah left.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She left Ireland. We know that Longford is the HQ for the Prison Service. So I don't know what her role is, but she worked for the Prison Service. So she'd been in America. I think she just wanted a new challenge. She was in her early 30s when she went. She'd been there for about 10 years. It seems to have been very popular. The Cayley House is a popular pub in Queens, in New York, large Irish community there. So Longford was devastated, but just speaking to our colleagues, obviously there was America, New York is still a very tight-knit community if you're young and Irish. So I think she would have been well known. So just devastation really in two countries.
It's very sad. The fellow who is accused of it, he was injured. Is that right? So he's in hospital or was unable to attend court?
Oh, well, yeah, he hasn't appeared in court yet. But yes, yeah, so he did suffer knife wounds in the same incident. Mm. And he has been arrested. He has been charged. So, you know, the process has begun, but he hasn't been brought to court yet. Obviously, they were waiting to talk to him. So obviously he improved enough for him to be interviewed and arrested. But I don't think he's well enough to go to court yet. So that'll be that. It could, look, you know yourself, but it could be happening at any time.
Yeah, obviously the hour difference. So maybe by the time this podcast goes out, he will have appeared. But that's where it is at the moment. Will we leave it there? Because that's probably a lot of content. Certainly on the Kinahan story, you know, it's what I actually meant to point out. I suppose we did mention it briefly that this month marks 2 years since those sanctions were imposed by the Americans and followed on then by the UAE authorities. So we're hoping that we'll hear something soon. I've made inquiries today just in terms of the status of those sanctions, because there were a lot of implications from them. If you even remember, Mick, there were people who were associated with Daniel Kinahan in the boxing world who were unable to enter the United States, including Tyson Fury. So does that still apply? We're 2 years on. How long do those sanctions remain imposed? So I think we'll have to get answers to those questions. And certainly the guards will hopefully give us an update in the coming days. I think it's maybe a week from now. A week and a half from now is about 2 years since those sanctions were imposed.
I always talk about this. I was banned from that press conference, so I was quite. I think it's the best thing that ever happened to me, because you can't be accused of being a Garda shill if you're banned from the biggest ever Garda press conference. But we're not going to mention the war. But look, it is 2 years. I think people would have expected more progress by this stage. Is that a fair point? Mm.
Yeah, that's why I'm voicing it, because, I mean, 2 years on, so, I mean, what are the results of those sanctions? I'm due to do an interview later this evening with Eric Montavlo. He's a lawyer who is taking a civil case against Daniel Kinahan and the former boxing company MTK Global, and he's suing on behalf of the Moses and Ralph Heredia, their boxing managers, and basically they're suing Kinahan over a dispute over a boxer that MTK took, and it's a multi-million dollar case going on for a long time. But he basically is asking for a judge to make a default order, and if that happens, which is looking more and more likely, in order for Kinahan to pay him those damages, the US can possibly use the assets that they've already seized. So from the same assets that we're speaking about that were frozen, in order to pay Mr. Montalvo. So they'll use those assets, those frozen assets, to pay him. Now, that's a very complicated process. I'm not exactly sure how that works or how long that would take, but that's basically how he might get his money. So that is, if they still, what is the actual process of these sanctions? For how long can the US freeze these assets? How long can they impose sanctions? We don't know. So we haven't heard anything about it since it was announced 2 years ago. We might get a tidbit of what's going on from this civil case, but unless we hear it from the Department of Treasury in the US or from the Gardaí or from DEA, there hasn't been any update since April of 2022.
Do you think if the feud hadn't started, that Daniel Kinahan would have been one of the biggest players in world boxing now?
Undoubtedly. I mean, I think he was already trying to secure himself as such, and he was being hailed by, you know, some of the biggest names in the sport, including Bob Arum, who was probably one of his biggest advocates. I see that our former colleague John Hand did an interview with Bob Arum in The Sun there only the other day. Just in case people think we don't mention the competition, we do. But Bob Arum is now slating Daniel Kinahan and has completely washed his hands of him and has called him all sorts of names under the sun. This is someone that he used to take money from, and he used to be lauding and being photographed next to. So it shows you his fall from grace. But once upon a time, he was a huge name in boxing.
They dropped him like a hot piece of excrement. I mean, that was it. He was gone.
Big time. And I mean, they took his money, you know, I mean, I suppose there's probably still questions over how much money did Kinahan pump into the sport? How many events were being arranged by him? Maybe that's for other sport journalists to answer, not maybe necessarily just crime journalists. But if you remember, he was organising one of Tyson Fury's, what would have been Tyson Fury's biggest fight at the time. He was trying to get a fight between him and Anthony Joshua.
He called him Daniel Kinahan. Remember Daniel Kinahan? Yeah.
So once upon a time, the biggest boxer in the world was calling out Daniel Kinahan. So yeah, if it wasn't for those sanctions, he undoubtedly would be a huge.
And do you remember that crazy sort of campaign on social media about Dan's the man, Dan's great? Why has everybody got Dan wrong? They all suddenly stopped as well, didn't they?
They did, although I'm surprised to see Bob Arum speaking out so openly now and criticising Kinahan. Most of those other people you're referring to haven't done that. They've just gone completely quiet. So we'll continue to watch that with interest. Thanks as ever for listening to us. Hopefully we'll have a lot more to talk about next week. It's one of those things where you have a week where there are a million crime stories and then suddenly there's nothing, and that's the way it goes. Having said that, the Kinahan story is always there and it's always huge. So thanks for listening.
We very rarely have quiet weeks, but anyway, thanks everybody.